When I went through a particularly brutal corporate restructure in 2014 at the company I was working at, I decided that would be my last restructure. I didn't quite know how I was going to leave, but over the next 10 years, that intent became a reality. And I'm now on a conscious break from work. I'm taking time to reinvent, reflect, and rejuvenate. I'm pursuing my own interests and experimenting with how I want to spend my time into the future. Welcome to a new series of Unchange podcasts. In the next couple of episodes, I'll be talking to people who have taken breaks from work for various reasons. I want to understand why they did it, what they did in their breaks, and what they learned from the experience. My guest today is Dr. Lizette Spangenberg. She is passionate about human-centered design, research, and solving problems. Her PhD thesis focused on improving work environments for healthcare workers, and her day job now focuses on making healthcare more accessible for patients. She summited Mount Kilimanjaro, traveled to 25 countries on four continents, and plays violin in the University of Pretoria's Symphony Orchestra. She strives to create beautiful and intuitive experiences on any platform and to help others learn and grow in the field of design. Hi, Lizette. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a real pleasure. You've done quite a lot. If I just look at your short biography and the things that you've done in your life, it's quite amazing, and I can definitely relate to all of the adventures that you've had. I'm a fan of adventures. So you took a bit of a break from work, or a sabbatical. How did you know that this was something that you wanted to do or needed to do?
So I've taken two sabbaticals, and both of those were for very different reasons, vastly differently structured, and had very different outcomes, if I can call it that. So the first one I took in 2017 for a month, and I had a very specific goal. I wanted to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. So I was at a point in my life where I'd been working for a few years. I'd always loved traveling. And I started finding that a lot of people would always say, oh, one day I want to see the Northern Lights. And one day I want to do this. And I realized that I also have those. And I also have these ideas of things I'd love to do. And it just suddenly kind of dawned on me that you kind of have to do something to make those dreams a reality. So beginning of 2016, I decided I want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. I started exercising, I started saving, started researching, and yeah, then eventually made that a reality. So I took a month off work and summited Kilimanjaro with my brother, and then took the rest of the month to travel through Kenya and Tanzania, and it was absolutely incredible.
So that specific time that you took off to go and climb Kilimanjaro, you were at a specific employer and then decided, you told them, I'm going to now do this, and you took a leave, and did you go back to the same employer afterwards?
No, I did not. So it happened to coincide with me realizing that I wasn't really a good fit at that employer and moving on to something else. So, and also a slightly different career. So the job I was in was more in web design, web, different things in web. And I wanted to move more into a UX, user experience design role. So I resigned my job, went on the trip, had one interview with a new company I was interested in before the trip. And they told me, cool, go and have your holiday. When you come back, you just need to have a meeting with our directors, and then we'll look at it after that. So I didn't have a job while I was on this sabbatical. I was, let's call it fun employed. Mm-hmm. And it was slightly nerve-wracking knowing that I didn't actually have a job to go back to, and I hadn't signed a contract or anything. So there was no guarantee that I was going to get a new job upon coming back. I had the interview right after I came back. They were very happy with me. I started there, and yeah, everything went very smoothly. So I'm lucky that the career that I moved into is something that is very high in demand. So I was able to slot back into work very easily that way. But I don't know if it would have been possible to take a month-long sabbatical while being employed at a specific employer. So my second sabbatical was last year for 3.5 months, and that also coincided with leaving an employer and then looking for something new. But that was very, very different. So the first one had a very specific goal. So I was going to climb Kilimanjaro, had the trek set, organized with a guide, tour all of that. The second one, I did my PhD from 2019 until end of 2022. And then I had my Viva in January 2023. So Viva, it used to be called a defense. It's essentially where you meet with your examiners, they have some questions, and they just want to talk about your ideas. But it's still extremely nerve-wracking because I had international examiners who are experts in the field that I was working in, which is healthcare design. And it was simultaneously very exciting and very terrifying meeting these people. For the 6 months leading up to that point, which was the end of my PhD, I'd been starting to realize that I wasn't quite sure if I was in the right role. I was in a management position. I was managing 54 people, which no one should ever have to do, way more than anyone should ever have to do. And I was not doing any actual design work anymore. So I was purely in management. I was in charge of retrenching people. I was in charge of discussing salaries and having performance reviews and talking to people when reviews weren't good and when we couldn't give them a 15% raise and all sorts of things like that. And it really started to weigh on me because my passion is in design. And with doing my PhD in healthcare design, I realized that that is actually where my passion lies, is helping people.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you at some point in your career go around you and go, this is not how I want to be spending my time. Mm-hmm. I had exactly that same aha moment looking around at what everybody in the open plan office was doing and going, I don't want to be here. I don't want to spend my time like this anymore. I want to spend my time differently. I don't know exactly how, but in a different way. So it's interesting that you had the same sort of epiphany.
No, definitely, because it was that whole idea of, because I found myself in management, I realized I'm spending my days telling people they can't have raises, we can't afford to keep them on. And it's a very important role in a company, but it was not something that I was passionate about. I wanted to be the person to actually help people, to either mentor designers, helping them grow as people, as designers, or to help people through my design work, which I know can be quite impactful. So majority of my family are in medicine. My dad's a doctor, my brother's a doctor, both my grandfathers were doctors. So I've always had a lot of empathy for people within medicine. So that's how I ended up doing my PhD into that field. And then just slowly coming to that realization, like you said, that this area that I'm finding myself in, it's not quite where I want to go with my life. So taking that time to then realize, but is this what I should be doing? And really starting to doubt where I was. So having a bit of a crisis in that sense. So feeling very lost, very untethered. It's apparently something very common after finishing a PhD as well, because that was the other thing. I realized that you start a career and you have this idea, okay, I need to make it. So I started as a junior designer, became intermediate, senior design lead. I then became a practice lead, and then I became the head of design. And in the same vein, I did my undergrad, I did my master's while I was working, and then I did my PhD while I was working. So I got to this point, I'm like, okay, I'm the head of design, I now have a PhD, now what?
And you've done everything that everybody's expecting from you. Okay, yes, it's almost like you're doing exactly what is expected.
Yeah, and what I expected of myself. Yeah. So I was like, I didn't think further than this. I didn't expect to ever get to this point, but now what? So, and it's this strange mindset that you always have to, you have to make it. And up until that point, I'd only been focused on doing the things. So I did the things. And I'm like, I didn't plan for anything after this. So it forced me to reevaluate, but what did I actually want to do with my life?
And how did you do that reevaluation? How did you do that introspection?
Ooh, a lot of, I'd say, panic attacks. I spent a lot of time researching and thinking and making lists and trying to figure out, but where do I go from here? So once I actually started this sabbatical, I did also start seeing a psychologist for the first time in my life, which was long overdue. Everyone should see a psychologist, I think, much earlier in their lives. And it was really powerful to start to understand myself better. So I was diagnosed with OCD and OCPD. So I really like rules and order and planning, and I really structured to deviate from that. And it dawned on me that the irony of having this actual obsessive compulsive personality disorder, which really likes planning and structure, and I had just gone into a unknown, undetermined sabbatical, which I had a vague idea for what I wanted to do, but no specific structure, no job at the end of it. And it was terrifying. But at the same time, I knew that before I started it, that this was going to be scary, but it was the only way to force myself out of that comfort zone, out of this cocoon that I've sort of created, and force myself to explore new possibilities.
That's so interesting, because I went through the same thing. It's almost as if you get to this place in your career where you go, okay, I'm here now. I've done all this stuff. I've achieved all of these things. Everybody's saying what a poster child you are for the company, that sort of thing. And then, but you still inside your heart go, but this is actually not what I'm doing. I'm feeling like I'm too comfortable. I'm too comfortable here. You know, I actually want to be uncomfortable, because that's where growth happens. You first have to have that uncomfortable feeling, that dissonance, because that dissonance pushes you towards really, really delving deep into who you want to be and what you want to become and what you want to do with your life. And I sort of went, I have to push myself out of this role. I have to actually dump myself in the deep end, go away from this high-paying corporate job, and I actually have to dunk myself in the deep end and make myself uncomfortable to really understand who's in there, okay, and what she can actually do when she's left to her own devices type of thing. So you decided to take this sabbatical to go and explore and figure out what to do next. So how did it feel the first couple of days after you'd left?
I couldn't believe I'd actually gone through with it. It was very exciting and very nerve-wracking at the same time. So I had this idea in my head, this fantasy of, you know, what I was going to accomplish. And I'm like, okay, I've just finished my PhD. I have all these ideas for research papers that I want to write. I've done some conference talks before. There's a lot of like conference talks that I can get out of this. I want to continue my research. I want to, you know, all of these ideas of things that I want to do. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do this, but first I'm just going to take a little break. I'm just going to just breathe. And the reality that it came down to is I watched a lot of reality TV. Anything you'd like to know about fine dining cuisine, home renovation, or property in the Bahamas, somehow I can tell you a lot about. And I have zero regrets about that. I was very, very burnt out. I mean, I did my PhD during COVID. And because my PhD, also a big part of it, focused on interviewing radiologists, it was very hard to get a hold of them because, you know, COVID. Mm-hmm. They were very burnt out. So I actually had to file for an extension on my PhD for the last year, because I couldn't do it in 3 years, because I physically couldn't interview the people that were central to my thesis. So I was very burnt out. I was exhausted. So I needed a break. I don't know if you want to go into the rest of what I actually ended up doing.
Yes. I think when you go into a hiatus like this, you have this fantasy of what it's going to be like. For me, it was like the first month, I'm just going to sleep. Okay, I'm going to sleep and then I'll decide what to do next. Okay, I had like a list of other things I wanted to do as well, but I had this whole fantasy of how the year would play out. So for me, I'd be interested to know, you had this fantasy of what you were going to do, and then what actually happened in those 3.5 months that you took off.
So I had this fantasy that I was going to continue my PhD research, and I was going to write articles, and I was going to be very productive. And at the same time, I wanted to research potential new employers, because I knew I wanted to work in design in healthcare in South Africa. So I started doing that research and I started looking at different employers and found that it is a very scarce field within South Africa. If you look at Europe or America, there are big companies that actually employ designers to help them. So it's something that's sorely lacking in South Africa. And there are some really cool companies doing very exciting things, but I think I know about four, and I now work for one of them. So that was my fantasy, was to just rest, first of all, to continue with my PhD research, and then to find a new job. So I thought I'd take like 3 or 4 months off. And then the reality, like I said, I watched a lot of reality TV, an entire season of Home Renovation in Australia, which I have no idea how I found that, but it was fascinating. And then there's a lot of other things that happened as well. So as you could hear from my intro, I really love traveling and I'm really passionate about traveling. So quite a lot of traveling happened as well. One of the first things we did is we traveled to the Drakensberg, went on some hikes, and then my fiance and I got engaged there. So we've been together for 6.5 years now. I sort of knew it was coming sometime, but I didn't know when. So that was super exciting. That happened a few weeks after I started my sabbatical. So then a lot of wedding planning happened. So we're getting married at the end of this year. So long engagement.
Yeah.
Thank you. So long engagement, lots of time to plan. So it's funny now when people ask me, oh, how's the wedding planning going? You know, how are things shaping up? Like, yeah, I did most of that a year ago, like when I was on the sabbatical. So everything's pretty much sorted. It's fantastic.
So was he with you on the sabbatical? Did he join you on it or for parts of it?
Parts of it. So my fiance is a software developer, so he works remotely. So we're together in the house every day, all day, anyway. So while I was on the sabbatical, he was working full time, but he did take breaks to be with me from time to time. So when we went to the Drakensberg, we also went to go and visit my parents for a week in the Free State. Because he's working remotely, he just took his computer with and then worked from there. And then we also went to the Netherlands and Belgium to visit some of my family, and we toured through there for about 2 weeks. So that was something that hadn't planned for a while. So quite a bit of traveling and exploring and just, you know, seeing the world. And we also went to Splashy Fen, which is there by Underberg, so nice music festival. Just walking around with friends and seeing the fire dancers and listening to nice music and camping. And during COVID, we all became a little bit housebound. And a lot of that was necessary for me to just break away from that and just get used to going out again and seeing different places and having that excitement of traveling to different places. So that was really great.
So what did you learn from the whole experience taking a sabbatical? I mean, what did you wish you had done more of and what do you wish you'd done less of?
Like I said, I started seeing a psychologist during that time. So I think that was really important for me. To understand myself a lot better and to understand the way that I process things, to finally understand that my brain genuinely does work different from other people's because of some of my diagnoses. And I would encourage anyone to go and speak to a psychologist. It can only help you learn techniques in terms of how to handle stress, how to handle burnout, how to handle that work-life balance. Nice buzzword that everyone's always talking about since COVID. But it's true. I mean, I was doing my PhD after hours while working full time. So I was working two jobs, essentially, and both were equally important to me. So I didn't have a balance. I was spending my weekends working on my thesis, and I wasn't seeing my friends, and I wasn't seeing my family. I only saw my fiance because we lived together. So seeing him, not necessarily spending quality time together. And I think the sabbatical forced me to just stop, take a step back, take a breath and reevaluate what is actually important to my life. So as I said, a big part of my career up to then had been focused on, you know, I want to be the best in my field. I still want to be, obviously, but just realizing that that doesn't have to come at the expense of everything else. You can still be amazing in what you do and not give up a little part of your soul in order to reach it. So learning a bit more about how to balance things and realizing that, you know, traveling, spending time with my friends and family and my fiance, those are things that are really important to me. And while I love my job and I really am very passionate about what I do, helping people, you know, get better access to healthcare, or whether it's helping doctors who improve their working environments, I can't make that the be-all and end-all because I lose a little part of myself in the process. It's hard. I don't think that I necessarily would have learned that lesson unless I had gone to that extreme where I did burn out very badly and felt like I was starting to lose a little bit of myself in the process. Yeah,
no, I can totally identify with that. And I think the first couple of weeks as well is just disentangling yourself from your personality, you know, from the work that you were doing into just becoming yourself again. Because you get so bound up in the work that you're doing and the career that you're building and the people that are trying to get something from you or you're getting, trying to get from them. So you become this complete, you get almost like entangled into your work environment, and the process of letting that go, it can be quite confusing and interesting, but then at the end, very liberating. And then you sort of realize, okay, this is who I'm supposed to be at the end of that.
Yeah, definitely. That almost feeling that your self-worth almost feels like it's tied into your work, which is a difficult thing, like you say, to untangle, because we want to be proud of what we're doing and you want to be proud of the work that you're doing. But just realizing that in the end, your work doesn't define you, and it's not all-encompassing, and you can do great work while still having a life outside of that as well. It's a hard thing to sort of come to terms with when you've spent so many years thinking differently about it.
For me, it was a big thing about just being in the world in a different way. I was in the world in a particular type of way, and I just wanted to experience life from a different perspective. I wanted to change my perspective on how I was living. So is anything about the experience, either one of the two sabbaticals, that surprised you? You know, something that was like, I didn't expect this to happen.
Definitely. I think with the first one, there was a part of me that never actually thought I would, you know, conquer the mountain, because it always seems like this thing, you know, like I've climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, and to be able to say that I've done that, I'm still surprised by it. I spoke to someone last week who actually struggled to believe me, because it sounds so incredible. It sounds like that pipe dream that you have, and it's actually really not. Okay, I'm not going to say it's not that hard. It is really hard, but it is doable. You don't have to be the fittest person on earth, because it's not climbing with scaffolding and all sorts of weird and strange things. It's a walk. You just have to go slowly and pace yourself. And it made me realize that I'm a lot more resilient and stubborn than I might have thought previously, because it's just a matter of keeping going. And then with the second one, I think more and more just becoming comfortable with, I don't know if discomfort is really the word, but what we were talking about earlier, this idea that you throw yourself into something and you have to step out of that comfort zone. So you have to embrace the fact that you don't know. That's also a theme that kept coming up in my PhD and as a designer. I mean, when you start a new project, you don't know. The client comes to you with a request. They might say, okay, make the button on this page orange. And we're like, okay, why? No, because no one's clicking on it. Okay, but why is no one clicking on the button? And a series of these questions, you eventually find out, okay, the client wants people to click on the button because then they fill in a form and then their call center calls you back. But the main reason why people aren't clicking on the button is they don't want people to phone them back. They want to be able to send an email and have someone email them back. So getting to the core of what it actually is. So when you start a project or something like that, you don't know the answer. You just know there's a problem and it's a vague one, and we have to embrace the ambiguity and figure it out. So I think a big part of my second sabbatical was that, like, embracing the ambiguity and taking the time to then, yeah, research new companies and going on interviews with different places and figuring out, but where would be the right fit for me? And I was lucky that I found a company who fit exactly what I wanted to do. And they were exactly at that point where they needed a designer. So I've been with them for a year now, and I'm very excited about the work that we're doing. And I feel like I've landed exactly where I wanted to go. So without taking that sabbatical, I don't think I would have been able to take the time to reflect and grow and learn enough about myself to understand where I needed to go next in my career.
And how are you consciously taking the lessons that you learned from your sabbatical with you into the new job? Because I think you probably learned a lot about yourself in that period. And are you making like a conscious decision to keep that sort of sabbatical mindset going in your mind?
Ooh, it's a hard one because there's never enough hours in the day. In terms of the sabbatical mindset, I'd say just taking the things that I've learned in terms of, you know, how to handle conflict, how to assert myself, how to know what is important and when to fight for it and when to actually just let things go because you're making a mountain out of a molehill. So being a bit more go with the flow, if I can say that. So like I said, I like plans. I like structure. I like things going according to plan, but that's not how life works. So being able to just take a breath and say, okay, this thing that I'm getting worked up about, is this actually worth my time? No. Does it actually matter in the bigger scheme of things? No. So let it go. And then we carry on with the things that are actually important. So I think a lot of that I'm still carrying with me and just constantly thinking about and sort of going through that feedback loop of what is important and what should I be giving my attention to. And if it's not important, then just letting it go.
And do you think you'll take a sabbatical again? And if you were to take another sabbatical, what would you do differently?
Oh, I'd love to. So when I was researching sabbaticals initially, there's a quite a well-known designer, Stefan Zagmeister. He does all these incredible campaigns for like Nike and Adidas and et cetera, et cetera. And he has this philosophy that every 7 years, he closes his design studio for a year and then takes a sabbatical. And he's done this twice now. And I was reading up about, you know, his background and what he did in that time. For one of them, he lived in Bali for a year and like made furniture. Fascinating story, but the idea of it was just so interesting to me that we shouldn't wait until you're retired, because his idea was he was stealing years from his retirement and interspersing them every 7 years. I just love this mindset that we shouldn't wait to live our lives until you actually have the time when you're retired, because at that point you'll probably be too old to be able to do a lot of the things you might want to. Like hiking to Everest Base Camp, which is something that I still want to do. So I would love to take another sabbatical, not anytime soon, maybe in a few years' time. I'm not sure if there's necessarily something that I do differently. Well, maybe having a bit more of a goal. Hopefully with the conscious breaks that I am putting into my work at the moment, I don't feel nearly as burnt out now as I have at previous points in my career. Well, I don't feel burnt out at all, actually. Hopefully, if I do take another sabbatical, I won't be burnt out and I won't need a month of reality TV to recover before I can actually start, you know, vaguely functioning as a human again. Yeah, I think there's so much value that you can get from it. Even just taking that time to spend on things that you're passionate about, whether it's traveling, whether it's hiking, whether it's playing with your pets in your yard, and just being fully present in the moment. Because I think for me, I have a lot of anxiety. So I tend to stress about things that are still going to happen. I tend to obsess about things that have already happened that I can't change, which there's no point in worrying about, but they do still give me anxiety. So being a lot more focused in the now really helps me with that. And I think that's definitely another thing that, I brought from my sabbatical mindset, is trying to be present in where I am now. And that's definitely something I'd want to carry through to a next sabbatical as well, is just being present with what you're doing at that moment and really fully enjoying it.
Mm. Yeah, it's amazing to me how many people take a sabbatical because they're burnt out. Okay. And I think there's so much more discussion and conversation that needs to be had around, why do we have to get to that point? Why do you have to get to a point where you're so, drained, to eventually take a break? And I think it's really important, like you said, but it seems to me as if you've developed the tools and the things to help you to not get to that point again.
No, I definitely feel like I have. And like I say, that's very much, down to working with a psychologist, helping me to work through that and figure out just having a sounding board there, because it can get very lonely in your own head and you start reinforcing negative patterns. And I have a habit of catastrophizing things, which I never realized there was a word, an actual term for this. So a lot of it was just being able to put words and terms and actual things to the way I was feeling or things that I was experiencing, where he could point out, like, you're catastrophizing that. So making a mountain out of a molehill, essentially. Now there are like lots of little small things where it just really helped to make me understand why I react the way that I do and why I feel the way that I do. And yeah, it really helped a lot.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of coaches. I mean, we easily get a coach if you want to get fit. Okay. Then you get a coach and the coach motivates you and helps you and gets fit. And even if you're going to be climbing a big mountain, you have a training program and a coach. I believe you should have coaches for almost every area in your life. You should have a financial coach, somebody who's helping you with your finances, or at least somebody who knows more than you do. And even like psychologists and life coaches and those sort of people are so useful to just help you to focus on the things that actually matter. So I'm a real big fan of coaches, in life.
No, definitely.
Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to mention that we didn't talk about?
I think just touching on the last thing that we chatted about now is just the importance of making sure that you have the tools to look after yourself. I think there's still a massive taboo in terms of getting help, whether it is, from a coach or a counselor or a psychologist, and just realizing that everyone has things that they go through. You don't have to be in crisis before you reach out and have someone to talk to. I mean, if I'd had a career coach 2 years ago to actually speak to about where I was and realizing that, I wasn't sure if this was right for me, I think that would have helped me a lot. But I didn't even know that was an option. So you don't have to be in crisis before you actually go and talk to people. You can get value. Even if you're completely healthy and completely happy, it can still just give you new insights into different ways of doing things.
Mm. Thank you so much for sharing your inspiring story with us. And thanks for joining me in the studio.
Thanks so much for having me.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.